This is a podcast brought to you by Tourism Geographies, an international journal of tourism, space, place, and environment published by Taylor & Francis. In 2022, Tourism Geographies was ranked second in Scopus Site Score Tracker in the subject areas Tourism, Leisure, and Hospitality Management, and secondly in Geography, Planning, and Development. In 2023, it's on track to be number one with a site score of 24.4 as at the 5th of August, 2023. We have joining us today Abigail Johnson, and she comes from the School of Hotel and Tourism Management, the Hong Kong Polytechnic University. Welcome, Abigail. How are you today?
I am doing very well. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So before we start, tell me a bit about yourself, who you are, where you're based.
All right. So first of all, thank you so much to not only to you, but to the editors of the special issue on Unpacking Black Tourism and the rest of the team at Tourism Geographies for this opportunity of letting me share my insights on the published article. So prior to my role as assistant professor at School of Hotel and Tourism Management here at PolyU, I've had the experience in teaching at the undergraduate as well as the postgraduate levels in the UK and Jamaica, as well as exposure to the industry, particularly in Jamaica. So in fact, most of what I tend to do is somewhat inspired by my country of origin, which is Jamaica. So it was there specifically in my hometown, Montego Bay, which is on the north coast. And I should also note that it's also considered what we call the resort capital of the island. It was in Montego Bay that I developed my passion for the hospitality and tourism industry. So I often state that once you're from the Caribbean, it becomes somewhat inevitable that your life is going to be intertwined with the tourism industry, you know, in some shape or form. And this is because of how tourism dependent the region is. So this really has become more evident, especially during COVID-19 pandemic. So it was within my home country, Jamaica, that I started to spot challenges. And you see, over a decade ago, I was involved in a number of technology related projects within the industry, but somehow we couldn't fully implement them as we wanted to on the ground. So I was keen on trying to address some of these challenges. And this is where my interest in pursuing research on technologies really started.
Thank you so much. And it's nice to bring, obviously, fellow researchers from different parts of the world, seeing that it's tourism geography. And I think you really unpack some of these topics within this space, especially on your newly, or rather recent, research on fake news, stimulated performance, gazing and performing to reinforce negative destination stereotypes. So before we get more into your research, what inspired you about this actual topic?
So what inspired me about the topic? So I have really an interest in looking at technological developments in tourism and stakeholder participation. So some see this as what we call engagement or even inclusion and exclusion, maybe to varying degrees in technology developments in hospitality and tourism. So if you look at my early work on value co-creation and the sharing economy, I was really interested in trying to figure out how we could foster inclusion of individuals in countries like Jamaica, and looking at how we can foster them particularly in peer-to-peer accommodation platforms. Now, this was way back in 2013, somewhere there about when concepts like sharing economy was not on the agenda of tourism associations in the Caribbean. I know that research led me to looking at how we could foster adoption and inclusion in other initiatives such as smart destination development and the creation of smart experiences. So of course, that work took more of a critical perspective as I started to realize how much power and politics and exclusion was manifesting. So while my work on technologies and tourism tend to be at the intersection of what I would think of as sociology and technology and tourism, the concept of space seemed to always emerge. And it became apparent in my work on smart mentality in Ljubljana, which Ljubljana is in Slovenia. So it was at this point back in 2019, there about 2020, that my work started to engage with geography. So I started to observe how spatial boundaries impact how people are able to be included and excluded from smart developments and the benefits and consequences of these types of practices. And now with this article that we're going to be discussing, I'm starting to see how space and place start to play a role in these technology developments. So I try to really show how space was reinterpreted, especially in order to produce what we call fake news online, particularly in destinations with populations of African descent. So much of my work and much of my interest is really surrounded on the social issues pertaining to technology experiences.
Thank you so much. That's very interesting. So in terms of your inspiration and obviously you going into this work into more depth of research, could you give us a good highlight of what was the key sort of question or research question that you seek to discover or explore?
Yeah, sure. So my interest, of course, is to show how the space was being reinterpreted. But let me start to give you a little bit more of a background before I really touch on what was the key question. So I've worked in the industry engaging with false narratives for a while. I've had to work particularly within the tourism board, and we usually have to go back and forth trying to counter claims, right? But really what was the icing on the cake for me was a specific issue that occurred during COVID-19. So as a member of the Jamaican diaspora, we tend to keep tabs on what's happening back home all day, every day. So we're in the middle of the pandemic and the news stories start to emerge about a tourist who was visiting Jamaica and suggested that they were being held hostage. It became such a trending story that it had its own hashtags. It had government official being interested in that kind of story. You even had US companies coming on board, embassies, a lot of retweets going on, a lot of sharing of posts. So it was a big deal. And it was particularly at that time, too, that it was a period in which we had a Black Lives Matter protest. I don't know if you remember back in COVID period.
Yes.
Right. Yes. So after doing a lot more digging and realizing that maybe the Jamaica situation and what's going on with the fake news online is not just a Jamaica situation, but it's a wider destination issue. And so I started to explore other destinations, particularly those of majority African descent populations, because I knew that we normally have an issue with stereotypes, but it was not in the form of fake news online. So, for example, what I found, there were fake news stories popping up in Zambia as well as Zimbabwe, and we had a few more inaccurate reportings going on in other destinations, particularly in other African countries. So here we have a lot of fake news that were being highlighted, especially during that time when we were trying to pay more attention to social justice issues. And at the same time, we're also gaining attention. These same stories were gaining attention from international news outlets and amassing thousands and hundreds of thousands of views on social media. So it was so interesting to me how quickly you have traditional media outlets gravitating to these stories. And it was as if they didn't learn their lessons from the past, because they were always targeted as, oh, the organizations who would purport certain stories. So now traditionally what you find is that we would try to address fake news stories that you find on the media. We would do so as destination organizations will try and do normal repair strategies of doing ads as soon as they pop up. And we would do those same ads on television or commercial on televisions to promote positive testimonials. But with technologies, it's quite different because what you have now is a case where everybody now has access to online platforms. It doesn't care where you are, Facebook, Instagram, you can name it. And at the same time, these are not just photos anymore. These are moving images. These are live broadcasts. These are productions. These are live. These are in real time. So based on my study, I decided now to explore how I was more interested in how fake news online is being produced, how it's distributed, and how people engage with it within these online spheres, but particularly from the perspective of these majority populations of majority African descent.
Thank you so much. Yes, and I think that has been a trending topic, and it still is, with a lot of, I guess, elections coming up, both in Jamaica as well as in the US and so forth. One of the questions I guess I would like to ask, even probably people listening would probably would want to know, are there any specific news outlets that you discovered that tend to sort of go left in the conversation, or or those organizations that will try to debunk some of these fake news or myths?
So, based on the research, and just me going through the data, I can't necessarily pinpoint organizations that were really aiming to debunk. It was more of a reproducing what was already produced online. And I find it interesting because if you look back, maybe in the literature dating back 1990s, we were arguing, especially coming from Stuart Hall and his work that he's done on media and representation, we were talking a lot about in terms of how can we how traditional media outlets, how the TV, the television broadcasters, they would purport certain news stories. And you would think now in the 21st century, when this is now being done online, that you wouldn't find them being involved in this kind of mess going forward. But instead, what is happening is that you're taking from online and reproducing it in traditional means. And it's kind of problematic because, especially when you think of how many persons still place high level of legitimacy and credibility in traditional means. But what is becoming interesting and what came out in the findings a lot is that those who are debunking the claims were relying a lot more on the user does online to debunk the claim. So they're playing more of an active role, in contrast to the normal or the traditional organizations that we would expect.
Very interesting. And you mentioned before, obviously, your involvement in online technologies and how that, I guess, goes into your research, especially around some of these case studies. Do you want to tell us a little bit of probably an overview of how you approach this particular data collection?
So in terms of, let's look at the mere fact that I was looking at trying to understand how fake news online was produced and how it's distributed. What you tend to find is that a lot of the conversations when it comes to fake news online, we're still looking on it from fake reviews and looking on it from a set of sites such as being on TripAdvisor and OTA websites. And we pay a lot of attention on fake posts. And yes, we pay a lot of attention, and then we try and urge practitioners to watch out for the content or the language and so forth. But these are really textual side of fake news, and we weren't paying more attention to the non-text side. But interesting too, when it came to the textual side, we have a lot more of quantitative work that we've done and not really trying to unpack the experiences and the processes by which fake news get produced. I mean, we tend to overlook the processual part of it, but it's important because it's also important in how we come up with the strategies of combating it. So these were some of the things that went into some of my thinking in terms of trying to understand what am I going to do, how am I going to really attack this problem. And if we're looking at it from a more of a procedural side and trying to unravel, then clearly and trying to unravel these experiences, then I'm going to take more of an interpretivist approach of trying to unravel things. So I really followed through with a qualitative case analysis, looking at three different case. And based on the analysis in itself, it led me to know moving forward to describing fake news as more of what we call simulated performances. I hope I'm not rushing ahead before time, because now I'm diving a little too much into theory, but you can put a pause on me if that's okay.
No, that's fine, because that was actually the direction of my question. Could you tell us a little bit more about that concept around, you know, that simulated performance?
All right. So based on my analysis, I tend to describe fake news now as not just simply narratives, but I see it as more of what we call simulated performances. And as a simulated performance, I've noted in the article, for say, that simulated performances would tend to have a setting. So we treat to construct the space, and we pay attention to the interactions that's going on with people and the different features that are being brought out in these online productions. And then we also have gazers who are there to tend to reinforce certain actions that happen, or they can also resist, or they can hold users to accountable practices. And then we also have a third element of that, which is also paying attention to the different identities that can emerge, both digital as well as backstage identities that can emerge. So now this whole concept of simulated performances was derived by being guided by two concepts that are quite familiar with in tourism. One, that of assimilation, which is when you replace reality with a representation. So it's the way in which something is represented, which usually differs from reality. So we have sub-Saharan Africa sometimes is being portrayed as the dark continent or a place of violence. It's quite common to hear they talk about it as a place of extreme poverty. The Caribbean also has a few notions of itself where we recognize it as a region of sex or corruption or crime or poverty. And then simulation, it's a concept really which is associated with French sociologist Jean Baudrillard. And Baudrillard is not new to tourism discourse at all, as we've drawn on a lot of his work to describe our famous Disneyland, Disney parks. And then we have the second concept, which is performance, which is rooted in the work of sociologist Irving Goffman. And it's all the activities that an individual does in front stage and backstage. So of course, there are two elements to it, like the appearance and characteristics, and a lot of that is being discussed in the article. So with these two concepts, both simulation and performance, they're able to really challenge and extend the theory and the concept regarding fake news in a number of ways.
Yeah, I think those are some good lens to obviously uncover some of these elements around negative stereotypes. So give us a bit more insight, and obviously you could just give us a teaser, because I know a lot of people would want to read after this. But based on your findings, there were some key themes that came about, you know, one being reinforcing negative stereotypes of destinations, as you sort of touched on a little bit earlier. But can you give us a good overview of some of the key highlights of your findings?
Yeah, sure. So having drawn on the theory and being able to extend, of course, drawn on the concepts and being able to extend theory in some shape or form, so we can have more or better strategies of combating fake news going forward. Some of the key insights that I want to share is that, for example, first, what we are realizing is now that we can't just see fake news as simply text anymore, right? We usually rely on textual communication strategies to address the problem. So we usually tell people, look out for the content, or look out for the tone or the style of writing or how short it is. But these are really textual means. But now what I'm proposing with the two concepts is that we see fake news as simulated performance to draw attention to it being a production, something that's orchestrated, something that needs us to pay more attention to how performances take place. So we need to look at how social interactions events are occurring, and more importantly too, how the places and some of the spaces actually are being produced and showcased. So in fact, this whole context of the online space really allowed me to enrich the tourism geography's work, as we're really centered on human geographies when you think about it and the type of work that we do in Tourism Geographies Journal. But by focusing on fake news on online platforms, I found myself also engaging a lot with conversations from media geography as well as Black geography scholars were. That was quite interesting to me. So that really led me to some other key contributions, because what we're also realizing is that simulations are no longer just being produced by institutions, as much of the previous work has been saying, but they're now being done by consumers. Now, some might stop and hasten to say, okay, so maybe they're being done by a particular type of consumer, maybe the white consumers. But that's not the case all the time. What we're now seeing in the study that was done is that are drawing on persons with mixed identities that are now playing a role in constructing the narratives. And we're also seeing that as performances emerge, so too are different users online. They're developing their own and exercising their own agency to counter some of these narratives, not just after they happen, but in real time. So users are no longer being passive and sitting down and watching like they're watching TV. They're being aggressive and active. And on top of being active and doing their own individual work, they're also forming their own social movements and their own social relationships. So it's almost some two of the cases that I looked at, for example, you could see commonality in terms of even the same users going back to the other post to go and attack it in a more cohesive and collaborative manner. So we also see another thing that we also see is that these performances are, they don't just affect who's online and who is watching this content online. They have far-reaching effects. So I don't want persons to go away thinking, oh, it's just a destination or the person who's been spoken about in the clip. But there are other businesses that are caught in it. So businesses that are mentioned, businesses that are in within these destinations or within certain regions, even businesses that are close to these businesses, even if you're not referred. Another point that I need to note too is that it also has implications for not only the person who commits the act, but their associations. So for example, there were cases where individuals' workplaces were being called into question to address these issues. So imagine I am making a fake news post on a particular destination, and my workplace is now being held accountable for my own personal actions, because users are calling for that to happen. They're calling for these users to either be fired from their workplace or they should be suspended. So now that now shifts who has power and who is in control of certain things. So this is what was happening in the space, and it really challenges some of the prior propositions that we had before.
Yes, it's a very complex area. You talked a lot about even some of the issues coming up from, I guess, mixed identity users. Were you able to drill down to sort of get or discover some themes in terms of what identities they sort of presumed in terms of their digital spatial identity in particular?
Yes, so this was also, this part was something that I think I would like to explore a little bit more, because it was in terms of the digital spatial identity, you had both the actual profile, that's the profile that's constructed that we see out front, but you also have their other identity, which is more of our own social identity, and that social identity which interlinks between what we saw was two different races. So persons who may associate with a white race and a Black race, and they end up becoming a product of a or representative of a mixed identity, but they would conveniently draw on different identities to support different narratives when they were talking or proposing certain ideas. So that was kind of interesting. And then we had terms such as persons describing these people as what we call, I think this has emerged a lot in African-American discourse, of calling them or labeling them as the Karens. Right. Mm. So now we see another manifestation of Karen, but it's within tourism discourse.
Oh. Could you give us an insight of what a Karen is for people that probably may not know?
Yes. Best way to explain what a Karen is to somebody who doesn't know. So it's really a... it's described mainly as a typical blonde person who makes problems to mainly, or causes problems particular to persons of African descent, or as they would label as blacks. So this person would tend to cause inconvenient problems, even though they're not necessarily affected by those problems. So. Yeah. Karens have been popping up a lot in social media discourse. There are different pictures to describe this type of Karen, I just found it interesting that you'd also see something similar happening, especially in the tourism space. When it comes to technologies, we might be focusing on justice issues, but not to a great extent. But now it becomes more important that we take more of a social justice lens to exploring what we see as an apolitical context, as I like to put it.
Yeah, most definitely. And it's so interesting to see that even these medias or media houses actually made the whole moniker of Karens popular as well. So
I guess
it's a space where it's a bit sensationalized. You know, some of these topics are wrong stereotyping. So it's very interesting. So just to conclude, were there any specific implications that you discovered, or any concluding statements you would like to give the audience around your research?
In terms of concluding statement, what I love in terms of implications for persons to realize is that we need to change our strategies in how we combat this problem of fake news. So, for example, when you look at destination marketing representatives, they need to ensure that repair strategies they're not just static, but they're continuous, because we're so used to, if you see a negative TV ad come up, then we go and create another TV ad and try and counter the discourse. But it's just a one-time ad, and then it goes away. But with social media, the posts are continuous and they're far reaching. So not because you delete the post today means that other persons don't have access to the post tomorrow. So we always need to be doing continuous work, and in real time, and proactive, and also paying attention to it in a more of a contextual manner in order to really be effective. So we really need to think about also holding individuals accountable for their actions, I think, especially because it has far-reaching consequences. And I've spoken a lot about some of the consequences, both social and economic consequences, in the article. You see, it's not about companies sharing fake narratives anymore, it's travelers. And because of that, sometimes we're a little bit hesitant in wanting not to approach them, because they're also feeding the economy, right? But we need to realize that there are a lot of consequences to that. And also, we need to combat negative stereotypes collaboratively. So local residents can be involved. They can play a part in highlighting the errors in arguments proposed. They can help to evaluate some of the proofs that are presented in the reports and the suspected online posts that appear to be fake news. We can also draw on tourists who have visited the destinations, who can also share alternative perspectives to combating negative narratives. We also need, for example, destination marketers. They can also consider capturing contextual material to help to debunk some of the claims, so they can engage with some of the organizations, especially those that may have security cameras on property, and trying to tap into some of those specific contextual details regarding day and time and date of video footage in order to debunk some of the fake news. So overall, we really need a more of a collaborative, real-time, continuous approach in order to move our efforts forward when it comes to fake news.
Thank you so much. So during our conversation, you mentioned a few, I guess, gaps in our tourism geography research. So moving forward, I was just thinking, were there any specific research pipelines you think would be coming out of this from your end? And possibly you could even share if there's any specific researchers that you probably would like to connect with or would like to engage with in some of these conversations.
So there were a few limitations from the article that was produced. So going forward, I would really love to capture more of on the ground response and witness occurrences on the ground. So I wish to enhance the work that was done with more ethnographic work. However, future, I'm also hoping to dive deeper into how individuals online are exercising their own resistant practices as fake news online are being reproduced in real time. I think this is continuing to be relevant as online platforms continue to provide individuals with a way of sharing their own stories. And it's a point that you had even made mention of earlier. But in terms of more of a tourism geography research focus, it's still early days, but I know for sure that I'm definitely continuing my interest in tourism and hospitality space and different forms of power that can emerge when it comes to tourism experiences. But regardless of that, I think we're heading into in a more progressive, we're looking at technology experiences in a more critical way. And I think especially when you look at tourism geographies as a journal, it's one of those journals that really enable you to put forward more critical work and allow you to dissect and question narratives, which we don't quite see that dominantly done within the tech space. So It's I'm really grateful for this opportunity. And of course, I'm really open to any form of collaboration as we try and move more of a critical lens when it comes to tech experiences in tourism and hospitality.
Thank you so much, Dr. Johnson. So to conclude, in the spirit of tourism geographies community, again, we like to connect agents of knowledge exchange and encourage humanizing the tourism and geographic research landscape. So I would want to leave a question that some of our guests had in the last interview. And this is Dr. Elan Yang and Hike. So what we're going to, obviously, the question they left with us is, and it's very interesting because I know you would have a very lovely answer for this, being from Jamaican heritage and a fellow foodie. So Elaine asked, if you were to use a type of food to describe your research, what would it be and why?
Okay. If I was to use food to describe my research, that's such a lovely question.
Lovely. It's a tough one because I know you probably have a lot of favorites.
It is. To be honest, probably a coconut, not the hard coconut. I'm talking the coconut like with the coconut water, so the green coconuts.
Like fresh coconut. Yeah.
Fresh. It's usually starts off hard on the outside, right? But over time, with long work and really pushing towards it, the more you get into it, then it moves from this hard crusty shell to something soft and nice and more palatable on the inside, but something that not only you can enjoy, but others can enjoy. So that's how I really see my work and or how I would want to interpret what I'm doing. Yeah. So more of a
perfect answer. Thank you so much, Dr. Abigail Johnson. And thank you for sharing some very interesting insights around the issues around fake news and how they impact destinations, how they impact organizations. I know you would have, as you mentioned, you would like to dig a bit deeper to see how they do impact destinations, as well as, I guess, the hospitality space. And we could see even in the past few, I guess, years, how even restaurants have even had to shut down because of some of these erosions of what we call the keyboard warriors or these digital activists. we would be interested in watching your space and seeing what else you sort of uncover around this topic. Thank you so much again for joining us, and I hope you have a very, very good day.
Thank you too.
Thank you to our guests, and thank you, our dear listeners, for joining us on this episode of the Tourism Geographies podcast. We look forward to you tuning into the next episode. I am a fear holder. Bye for now.